From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. We are one week until Election Day. And finally, I get the sense that perhaps we'll have a verdict by the end of the night. That's my hope anyway. At least by we come back Wednesday morning, I'll be on the show and we'll be able to talk about it. We'll tell you what's happening in Texas. Huge flock of people that are being sent now to New York back to Texas to the tune of 4,500. And it costs, guess what? New Yorkers a ton of money. So we got to take care of them here. We got to take care of them, sending them back to Texas, and they can't take care of them. So I don't know what's going to happen, but they are building their own wall, which I think is pretty cool. So that's it. So before we take your calls, let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The problem I have with the Washington Post is the bias in the newsroom. But in recent years, they have become blatantly partisan, and I think that's a tragedy for the news.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on Fox and Friends 2 hours ago. The media freefall, a massive rebuke of the mass media by the mass public, has newspapers deciding to stay out of the endorsement game. But the decision is not without a price. We'll examine.
Number two. How did we get here? Where a stadium of people come to hate.
Yesterday's Trump rally from hell.
Vile, racist, sexist insults dominated Donald Trump's rally at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, what was she watching? Harris bleeding male support and hopes to make her final case tonight at the Ellipse in Washington, D.C. What seems to be the theme? Donald Trump will destroy the country.
Number one.
The opening act, grabbing headlines for all the wrong reasons. A comedian who offered unfunny, racist, cringeworthy jokes.
Basically calling Puerto Ricans trash.
The most repulsive racial jokes about Latinos.
Unless, of course, you watch the Tom Brady roast, same comedian. I don't know who booked him, but the fallout from MSG, the appearance, is distracting from the historic six-hour show on Sunday. We discussed the Trump closing argument and the optimistic feel while noting the desperate push to label the 45th president as an unhinged Nazi. And I'm not exaggerating. I'm quoting, which is crazy. By the way, did you watch? I mean, if you're a hater, you watch and you see Hulk Hogan. All right, showman. Elon Musk. Genius. RFK Jr., Democrat. Tulsi Gabbard, converted Republican from Democrat presidential contender. And then you have Dana White, the most successful sports executive maybe in the world. So you got people from everywhere. I don't even know who's conservative and who's not, what they believe and what they don't believe, because Trump has blurred the line. And he's giving people jobs and responsibilities, which I think is pretty cool. But everyone's talking about the comedian and his jokes that were not funny, and the audience groaned, by the way, when he brought up the Puerto Rican joke saying it's a floating pile of garbage, which I don't know, where's the punchline? You could tell me. But in the meantime, that's all the enemies wanted of Donald Trump. Told you this was an evil place. Told you in Puerto Ricans you shouldn't vote for Trump in Florida and in Pennsylvania. Here is Alex Castellanos, who is a Republican, a Republican, and a political consultant. So what do you think that he would be talking about? Is that going to help the closing message? Don't think so. But I also don't think that it's relevant to go out of your way in order to decide that that is really what that whole thing was about. So I'm very curious to see people overreact as if Trump has never said anything personally controversial before. Here is Mika Brzezinski talking about overall what she saw. Cut 20.
We got to wake up. And here's the good news, because I come with such dire warnings and I mean them from the bottom of my heart as a daughter of refugees who came here escaping war, came here for America to be a part of a democracy, to be a part of building something beautiful where they could be free. I'm telling you. The good news is that I believe women will be the beacon in this election.
Is she crying? Shouldn't she wait till election night to cry? She's actually crying a week ahead of time. She's in full Motown mode. Can you imagine living with her, with a presidential candidate is winning or losing? She actually thinks that Americans or Donald Trump would throw out Eastern Europeans who came here legally? Are you even paying attention, you lunatic? Who would even listen to a word she says? Her dad was Secretary of State for Jimmy Carter, which some pretty terrible foreign policy, don't you think? But in terms of the message, the final message, of course, AOC, President Trump is at the Garden like 1939. I don't mean to get off your narrative, but also at the Garden, Bill Clinton closing out his campaign, Harry Truman, FDR, different garden, different place, same Mecca, most famous arena that came there in 1968, Eisenhower. But in between, just focus on 1939. Listen to her. Cut 33.
When he goes up on a stage and the people that he wants to appoint as leadership heads in administration, and they echo the words of Adolf Hitler, in America for Americans. No, he's not talking about U.S. citizens. He's talking about who he believes is loyal enough to Donald Trump. And that's who he considers an American.
So she goes to the most liberal part of Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin, and try to get that vote out. Those are the people that like her. There's very few places that will look at AOC as an asset, mostly as a clown, mostly as a socialist clown show, like all the squad. So they go to the most liberal places, I guess, to bring out the audience. They play Madden with, she plays Madden with the governor of Minnesota, who happens to be the vice presidential nominee, AOC. So she is, of course, talking in stark terms. Who could talk starker? How about Bernie Sanders? Yeah, he's still there. Cut 34.
And yesterday, as Alexandria mentioned, Madison Square Garden, we saw what misdirected and vicious and ugly anger is all about. We saw a people on the floor talking about Kamala Harris in not only a racist way, but in a vulgar, sexist way. We saw racism on stage in a way that I never thought I would be seeing in the year 2024.
Are you bored with this already? Racist, sexist, misogynist, whatever, just pick one. And the American people, I think, are looking past it. I'm not going to know until Tuesday. But I think all this stuff, this apocalypse is coming if Donald Trump is elected. He wants to be an autocrat. He wants to rule like a dictator. It's going to be a bloodbath. All of you know that that's folly. And for the people who are independent, undecided, just compare 4 years with Trump to 4 years of Joe Biden. She said she wouldn't change anything different. It's not hard. I'm not asking you to go back to Donald Trump's family member or Donald Trump's vice president or Donald Trump's chief of staff or secretary of state. And imagine, I'm telling you, go back to that guy. He looks the same. So we'll see where this goes. Today, Donald Trump will be in Pennsylvania. Vance will be in Michigan. Harris will be in Washington. Waltz will be in Georgia. RFK Jr. and Tulsi will be in Wisconsin. Michelle Obama will be in Georgia. And Bill Clinton will be in Pennsylvania. I don't know why it's so hard to get their surrogates to sync from the same page. But if you see Bill Clinton, his message is dramatically different from Barack Obama and for the most part for Kamala Harris. I mean, listen to some of the anger that you get from Michelle and Barack Obama. I feel like saying if you're that angry with the country, maybe you might not want to do it. Maybe you could pass this cycle. But I thought you liked Kamala Harris and want to get on the same page. But it doesn't seem. It seems like you have one message from Obama. And the message is pretty clear. It is, he gets personal. And he says, all you people who think Trump is tough, all you men, well, they're not tough. Here's the quote. I've noticed this, especially with some men who seem to think Trump's behavior is somehow a sign of strength. You know, sort of the macho, fake macho thing. I'm here to tell you that's not what real strength is. That's right. We need Barack Obama to tell us what real strength is. Why don't you also tell me by the color of my skin who I should be voting for? And if I don't, make me feel like less of a person or a sellout. Who told him that that message is going to hunt? Don't you know the American people, if you look at our sense about the mask mandates and the vaccines and the closing of schools and the 6 feet apart, isn't it pretty clear that the American people don't like to be ordered around or told what to do? The president, though, is doing something kind of interesting, the former president. He not only is trying to win the battleground states, he thinks he's got a shot at New Mexico. He's got some internal polling. I see one last poll from the Albuquerque Journal from October 10th to the 18th. He's trailing by 9. He's also going to Virginia, where he's trailing by 6. He's also going to New Hampshire, where he's trailing by 4. You know, Governor Sununu was on with us last week, I think it was, and he was saying that the Trump people really could get New Hampshire, that they pulled out too quick, and the governor could use some Republican support. So I think that's part of the reason why the governor, the Republican nominee, because Governor Sununu is not running again, I think that's part of the reason why he's going back. Last time a Republican won in New Mexico, 2004, in Virginia, 2004. But they got this thing called the Republican governor that shocked the world in Governor Youngkin 3 years ago. And he's going to be done in one term, one and done. And he's going to be, I think, joining, if Trump wins, he'll be joining the Trump administration after his 4 years are done. I'm sure he's just too talented. So 1-866-408-7669. The closing arguments. Trump's doing a pre-buttal today in a presser at Palm Beach. Presser, not a speech, a presser, which means I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know the questions we're going to have. And then a little bit later, she's going to give her closing argument at the Ellipse. It's going to be exciting. I think it's really interesting to see where the polls are trending. And I think Republicans have a reason to feel optimistic, but they're crazy if they think they've won. And before we go to break, Norm O'Donnell did a pretty good interview with Kamala Harris, it seems, by some of the sound bites I've heard. Let's listen to another one. When asked if the polls are slipping away from her, cut 28.
In giving that polling, which I'm always reluctant to put too much emphasis on, but it does suggest that your momentum has slowed. Do you feel like the race is slipping away?
I do not. And actually, and I agree with you. I think certainly polling is a measure, but to be frank, if I'd listened to polls, I would have never run for my first or second office. I wouldn't be here talking with you. And what I am seeing are in states such as North Carolina, Georgia, historic turnout.
Yeah. Mostly for Republicans. The turnout you should feel best about is Pennsylvania, it seems. But on the other place, the Republicans are coming out. And by the way, I'm getting a lot of emails from people in North Carolina. They feel totally abandoned up in western North Carolina after that hurricane. So, by the way, who's in office? You're in office. Go impress people by going into a Republican area or whatever and saying, what do you need? Do you need tractors in the mountains? Do you need more equipment? Do you need rations? Where's FEMA? Whatever. It would be great to do your job as well. That might be the best campaign stops ever. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So consequential. So glad you're here. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
If I were covering this the same way we used to cover it, I would look at this and say, Trump appears to be in the ascendancy. His campaign seems to have momentum. His events seem to be more exciting. They seem to be going better. She seems to be struggling. She struggles to answer questions. She's not doing well in interviews and so on. And I would say this, but the polls don't reflect that. The polls say this is absolutely neck and neck. Judge the old-fashioned way, it wouldn't appear to be. Judge the way we judge them now because we're just surrounded by polls. That's where we're getting the idea that this race is tight.
Right. And you know, Bridgman brought up they didn't do as many polls. And they say you just go out there and you have a feel and that's how you report. But now it seems like there's cheerleading going on. And then you have so many different polls. But you know what the thing is? The polls haven't really been that divergent. Arizona, they say, now leans Republican, which is amazing considering the bad blood with John McCain and the voting and so many and the governor, the Republican governor lost. And then you have Sinema drop out and you have Kerry Lake trailing. But when it comes to the presidential race, 2.5 points, it looks like for the most part, Trump's up. Georgia, that looks much better. The question is Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Nevada, as well as Michigan. Brian, you're listening over in Pennsylvania. What's on your mind, Brian?
Hey, love the show. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on all this hubbub about the comic. It's ridiculous, Brian.
Tony Hinchcliffe.
Yeah, I mean, it's humor. Not a good choice to have a roast comedian for such a diverse audience. But I heard Martha Stewart once at a roast say such horrible, raunchy things, I could hardly believe it. All you had to do was laugh. So I just think it's ridiculous. And as far as this Hitler thing, I just wanted to remind everyone that the Social Democrats in Germany had a big factor in rising Hitler to power in the 30s. And I just think it's so laughable. What the whole world is looking at us. What about Germany and Italy and France who suffered under the Nazis? The world is looking at this with their jaws agape. I just think they should continue. It's so ridiculous that everyone's laughing at this comparison
of
Hitler.
Well, they were putting Jews in ovens, and you compared that to Trump? Are you insane? You bring up something that happened in 1939, not the Knicks, the Rangers, Eisenhower, or FDR? That's the comparison? Oh, the only thing MSG reminds me of is a 1939 Nazi rally. I want you to hear what John Stewart said last night. Now, I watched because I just want to get an idea. I thought, John Stewart, it's Mondays. I'm listening Tuesday morning, getting ready this morning. And I thought, he's just going to kill Trump on this. But listen, cut 18.
Now, obviously, in retrospect, having a roast comedian come to a political rally a week before Election Day and roasting a key voting demographic, probably not the best decision by the campaign politically. But to be fair, the guy's really just doing what he does. I mean, here he is at the Tom Brady roast a few months ago.
The great Jeff Ross, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff is so Jewish, he only watches football for the coin toss. Gronk, you look like the Nazi that kept burning himself on the ovens. Kevin is so small that when his ancestors picked cotton, they called it deadlifting.
Yes, yes, of course. Terrible, boo, yes. There's something wrong with me. I find that guy very funny. So, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, bringing him to a rally and have him not do roast jokes, that'd be like bringing Beyonce to a rally and not
And not having her sing, because she didn't. And everyone said, what the hell is going on there? His name is Tony Hinchcliffe, and he put this on X. He said, these people have no sense of humor. I love Puerto Rico and vacation there. I made fun of everyone. Watch the whole set. Trump supporters were fairly unfazed by it for that reason. The crude nature of the remarks by some speakers in MSG might not matter. That, according to Doug Hay, a former communications director for the RNC. Hay went on to say, we keep asking ourselves if this latest outrage du jour will hurt Trump. 9 years into this, going back to Access Hollywood tape, the glaring answer is no. Allison, do you agree?
No, John Stewart has an excellent point.
Right. And I was surprised because then he went off on Trump and stuff that he said. He said negative things about Trump afterwards. Believe me, he's not complimenting Trump. He also indicated on a side note that he's not going anywhere after the election. He said, I'm going to be here every Monday. And for some reason, everybody in Hollywood loves him. He gets Emmys. He's great at what he does. And he is good. But how do you give a guy an Emmy who's worked 2 months on a Monday? For best host. Come on.
It tells you how bad the rest of the field is.
Even the other hosts. I mean, think about the other hosts on the Daily Show. Thanks. Why am I working 4 days a week?
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The stuff last night was so over the top, it's unbelievable. Let me just one little factoid here. You know how many Puerto Rican voters there are in Pennsylvania? 273,000. This is going to cost him both in a substantial Puerto Rican vote, also in Michigan. And I've worked. These are very prideful people. They describe that they're Puerto Ricans first. They describe that is their identity marker. And this is a community that is not going to take well to this. I promise you.
I don't understand the outrage and these people. Are they serious? It was a 6-hour show at MSG with 5,000 to 10,000 outside, 20,000 on the inside in bright blue New York City. And the main thing that people want to talk about is a 7-minute set that contained maybe 3 minutes that Puerto Ricans would find offensive. He was, as he said, I don't know who booked him. That's not really a place for an insult comic. but he's doing what he does on his podcast, which was popular. I guess the president might have went on there. I'm not sure. His name is Tony Hinchcliffe. But do you really think Puerto Rican's going to bow out for a stand-up comic that was on 5 hours before Trump? Let's ask Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. Colonel, your thoughts. Could you put in perspective how this is playing out in Texas where you are?
I can tell you that playing out in Texas, no one's talking about it. Everyone's talking about the fact that Kamala Harris came here to Houston, Texas, the place where two Venezuelan gang members of Trinidad Agua brutally raped and murdered a 12-year-old girl, Jocelyn Nungare, and for whatever reason, Kamala Harris couldn't find the time to visit the family, not to say a single word, not to even mention her. So that's what people are focused on here. And, you know, this is what comedians do. I mean, let's go back and remember the days of Richard Pryor, Red Fox, George Carlin, when comedians got up and they did insult people. I mean, Don Rickles, as a matter of fact. I mean, how much did he insult people? So when did we become so sensitive? But this, again, is the left grasping at straws, anything that they possibly can, to include looking at 20,000 people inside the arena, like you said, another, 30,000 outside the arena, and calling them Nazis. I mean,
it's
where
crazy.
Do you come off with that? It is beyond crazy. And furthermore, what does Nazi stand for? It stands for National Socialists. So really, they're talking about themselves.
So, I mean, that's going to be the closing message today. Why else you would be at the Ellipse in Washington, D.C.? I mean, she wants to say January 6th, this guy's unhinged and this guy's a fascist. And we had Melania Trump on 2 hours ago. And, you know, in fairness, Trump has called her a fascist, too. I think you could do without that. But Melania Trump's here, but the way they're talking in such stark terms and being that he's leading, she is really worried, and so is the camp, about another assassination attempt. And they're only making it worse. It's like they're not, they're actually almost doing it on purpose. Listen to Mika Brzezinski, Cut 19.
This is called normalization.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is the descent into fascism, if we so choose. Normalizing January 6th, it's a day of love. It's a day of love. I'll say it again and again and again. Normalizing enemy from within. I'll say it again and again. I'll say it again and again until you get tired of it, until it's not so funny anymore, or you think he doesn't mean it, until you realize he does mean it and it's too late.
Right. I think she said this after she went to his wedding, I'm pretty sure. When his first year in office, she went and had lunch at the White House. But of course, she just realizes now he's Hitler. And you hear a voice? Colonel, she's about to cry.
Yeah. Well, look, Barack Obama once talked about punishing your political enemies. He also talked about never bringing a knife to a gunfight. But obviously, that's acceptable rhetoric. And furthermore, when you talk about Kamala Harris, here's a person that helped to bail out people that were burning down an American city. You're talking about her vice presidential nominee, who, when the mayor of Minneapolis asked for National Guard support, his response was, have they had DEI training? So these people, once again, are trying to project on others who they are. And I will tell you that when you talk about fascism, when you have a Biden-Harris administration that, according to Mark Zuckerberg, tried to pressure them into suppressing the free speech and freedom of expression of American citizens, that's fascism. When you want to talk about being a dictator, telling people what type of car they can drive, what type of appliances they can have in their home, what type of home they can build, what type of food they can eat, what type of toilet water they can flush, that is being a dictator.
Now, I know. I hear you. You're not talking hypotheticals. They actually said that. People around the country don't realize it. In New York, I'm not sure what they're doing in L.A. They actually said that. They're going to start regulating the ovens. They don't want us using gas ovens anymore, the type of refrigerators you get. And now they said in 2035, no more gas cars. And then the week they announce it, they've got electric cars. They told everyone not to plug your cars in because they're running out of energy. So that's now.
Correct.
Can you imagine if you force everyone to get one, to get a plastic car, an electric car? But just talk about the messaging, the messaging tonight. Yeah. Here is Barack Obama. I don't think they coordinate their surrogates, or they're afraid of Clinton and Obama because they're so powerful. Tell me that this is on par with what Harris should be saying. Cut 32.
And I've noticed this especially with some men who seem to think Trump's behavior is somehow a sign of strength. Sort of the macho, fake macho thing. And, you know, I... That's, I'm here to tell you that's not what real strength is.
Really?
It never has been.
Really? Thank you for that, Dad. Please tell me what real strength is. I'm pretty sure that I don't need Barack Obama to break down. We've seen Donald Trump on the conservative side 9 straight years. Right? 9 years, 4 days a week? Yeah. I'm pretty sure I've made my own decision without someone breaking it down for me.
Well, I'm going to put it very clearly. Barack Obama is the embodiment of a Delta male. He is not the embodiment of Ronald Reagan's speech through strength and the strength that we saw in the foreign policy and the national security policy during the Trump administration. Let's never forget that during the Obama-Biden administration, we saw Russia make incursions into eastern Ukraine. We saw the rise of ISIS. Donald Trump comes along. He gets rid of Qasem Soleimani. He gets rid of al-Baghdadi. He bombs a Syrian air base and kills 200 Russian paramilitaries. Militaries, not a peep out of Putin. Kamala Harris goes to Ukraine to sit down and talk about supporting Vladimir Zelensky, and by her own admission, 72 hours later, Russia invades Ukraine. That's not strength, and we're not talking about macho. We're not talking about, you know, toxic masculinity. We're talking about what my mother, you know, taught me. A man must stand for something or else he'll fall for anything.
All right, I got 2 more topics to get to. Jeff Bezos did something really interesting. I don't know him, obviously. I'm in awe of the company he created, as is most business people. Took huge losses for years, but Amazon is might be the best company in the world. So Jeff Bezos bought the Washington Post. It's losing a ton of money. And he decided, after getting beat up on because of the content of his writers by Trump, I think this plays a role in it. And also seeing that he's losing money and seeing the distrust in media. They do this study and they ask people, do you trust the media? In 2012, 40% said yes. In 2016, 32% said yes. Now it's down to 31%. Not very much. Is it 33%? Not at all, 36%. So he says, why would I endorse? Why would I go out of my way to have my newspaper endorse anybody? The LA Times doesn't endorse. The Tampa Bay Tribune doesn't endorse. USA Today says no. Minnesota Star Tribune says no. And Los Angeles, as I mentioned. So when the Washington Post says no, Bezos loses some editors and 200,000 subscribers. But he writes this: our profession is now the least trusted of all. Something we are doing is clearly not working. We must be accurate. We must be believed to be accurate. It's a bitter pill to swallow, but we are failing on the second requirement. Most people believe the media is biased. Anyone who doesn't see this is paying scant attention into reality. And those who fight reality lose. Reality is an undefeated champion. It would be easy to blame others for our long continuing fall from credibility and therefore decline, but a victim mentality will not help. Complaining is not a strategy. We must work harder to control what we can control to increase our credibility. And part of that increase is keep the editorial page out of this election. Write about it yourself, but don't ask the newspaper to endorse it. And yet some people feel that's it. I quit.
Well, goodbye. Let the door hit you where the good Lord splits you. What you just saw from Jeff Bezos is a businessman's perspective. He is not an ideologue. It's just the same as when you go back to when Michael Jordan was asked who he's going to endorse or support. He said, hey, look, Republicans buy tennis shoes just the same as Democrats do. So I think it's very important that we start to have a newspaper and media outlets that understand the First Amendment, freedom of the press, but that means the freedom of an objective press, not a subjective press. You know, there's a reason why people look at someone like a Mika Brzezinski or The View, and they're just like, you know, these guys are way out of line. They don't want to have an honest discussion about the issues. They're getting into this politics of personal assassination, and they're aligning themselves ideologically. And Jeff Bezos said that's not a good business decision.
So they said that they have roughly 2.5 million subscribers. They lost 200,000. Maybe it's growing. They have a 10-person editorial board. They've announced three of the 10 are leaving. So good luck with that. Lastly, hey, yeah.
I'm available. I'd like to be on the editorial board.
Go ahead. I don't think they want you. Personally, I wouldn't take it. So the border crisis. The Freedom of Information request submitted by the Telegraph shows that the agency of the Homeland Security calculates an estimated 1.8 million migrants cross the U.S. southern border and northern border without being apprehended, so-called gotaways. The data released monthly by U.S. Customs and Border Patrol shows 7.15 million tried to enter the country illegally since Biden and Harris had their full their first full month in office. However, when immigration data is collated every month, it does not include those who evaded detection, the so-called gotaways. And 30% of the cameras are out. That's how you pick up the gotaways for the most part. So they don't want to see what they're missing.
No, you're absolutely right. And let's put that in terms of our national security and relation to our armed forces. When you talk about 1.8 to 2 million gotaways, that is bigger than the entire active duty military. When the ICE released those numbers, I think it was about 2 or 3 weeks ago on a Friday, saying we've got like 420 to 425,000 criminal illegal immigrants in this country, to include 30,000 rapists and murderers. The United States Army active duty and strength is 425,000. The United States Marine Corps right now sits at about 180 to 190,000. We have more criminal illegal immigrants in this country than we do of our active duty and strength of our premier land combat forces.
It's a very good perspective. And finally, 2,297 tickets have been purchased by New York City to send illegal immigrants back to Texas over the last 6 months. Of a course of $13.8 million total spent on reticketing. Top three cities people are reticketing to, we're sending them to: Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio. What's your reaction?
Yeah. Well, think about this. We just had a woman that was attacked here in Dallas by Trinidad-Aragua gangs. We had Trinidad-Aragua doing recruitment at a middle school in Houston, and we have three or four apartment complexes that have been taken over by Venezuelan gangs. So, in other words, we're just going to dump all of these problems here in Texas. This is something we're going to have to deal with. The best thing that we can do is send them back across the border, and that's why we need Donald Trump back in the White House, and we need Tom Homan as the head of ICE once again.
It would be great. Looks like if Texas is going to start building their own wall. So just go do it. And they bought a whole bunch of private land, bought it for the state so no one can stop them. I love that idea. Lieutenant Colonel Allen West, thanks so much.
Thank you. And good luck to your Yankees.
Oh, man, well, they need it. Down 3-0 in the best of 7. The worst is they haven't lost heartbreakers. They've just, they're not hitting. And they look dead. In the Bronx, how do you come back and be dead? When we come back, we'll stop in Tulsa, Virginia, Orlando, and D.C. You'll listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And even when he campaigned in Pittsburgh on Saturday, the campaign sends out a daily email of all the surrogates, includes actors and actresses and, you know, members of the cabinet. They did not mention that Joe Biden was going to be in Pittsburgh on Saturday, even in that email.
So they just left the president of the United States off the list.
They did. And they could claim oversight. But the fact of the matter is, like, they don't believe that the president is helpful in this final stretch. Now, Joe Biden and even some of the people on the Kamala Harris campaign, formerly of the Joe Biden campaign, believe that actually the Kamala Harris campaign is underestimating his appeal in some of these smaller communities. They understand he's unpopular, but they still feel that he has appeal with some of these, you know, especially older voters, older white voters.
Yes.
In Pennsylvania. And they think they're making a mistake.
Couple of things. If they lose, Joe Biden and all people that like him, and he's so stored, he's so dug in Washington, are going to destroy Harris and maybe even go after Obama and Clinton, because they really just kicked him to the curb, led by Nancy Pelosi, who said, I thought one of the men would step up, meaning one of the presidents. And when they didn't, I just stepped in and said, you know, the president's got to let us know if he wants to run. He let us know he wants to run. Well, he's got to let us know. They had fun with that on Jimmy Fallon on The Tonight Show. And now that he got the ultimate insult, and look, if I'm in politics, I understood George W. Bush, after his second term in when the economy collapsed, he had something like 28% approval rating. When John McCain is running for office, even though they didn't get along that well, he went to the White House. They were not even pictured together. He wasn't on the stump. Bill Clinton wasn't on the stump for Al Gore. It's just, that's the way it is. Grow up. But there, he's not taking it well. Evidently, he was upset when because Kamala Harris wasn't talking enough about what they did together in the White House. So when they were looking at the content of the speeches, he was upset, let alone the fact he's been kicked to the curb now and has been virtually ignored. He's not any help. He's a terrible campaigner, and he is really, really angry. I just also wonder what Kamala Harris is doing. She told Joe Rogan, when Joe Rogan said, listen, I want to interview you, it's not even going to be an interview. It'll be a conversation like I normally do. You know what their camp came back and said? Well, we're not doing 3 hours, and we're not going to Austin. You have to meet me in Wisconsin. And Joe Rogan said, no, I'm not meeting. I don't meet anyone in Wisconsin. I just did 3 hours with the former president. Here's Hugh Hewitt on Harris's decision to sit down and do Shannon Sharpe's podcast, Cut 37.
She could not speak in other than cliches, and he could not ask a question about policy. So the vacuity of the interview overwhelms you, as do the number of ads that Shannon Sharpe put in there. So he's a fine sports guy. He doesn't know politics, and she doesn't know politics.
Yeah, well, he thinks he does. That's the issue. Thinks he does. So she did that podcast. Again, Joe Rogan is not a political insider, but he's so well-read, knows so many people. You know enough to ask questions. That's all. You know, if you're interviewing an athlete, you don't need to be an expert baseball or football player, whatever sport they're excelling at. What you need to know is go out, go watch some tapes. You take a look at their videos, look at where the sport is at, and then you think to yourself, what does the general audience want from Alex Rodriguez, for example, when he sits down in our set last hour on Fox and Friends? You know, for somebody who just says, I know him because he dated J-Lo. Well, what do they want? So you would think that they do a little bit of research. Shannon Sharpe do a little bit of research. What Joe Rogan will want. Joe Rogan's going to know exactly the job she had because he's out in California. Know exactly his reputation. Knows exactly what happened because he talks politics constantly. Would have been a great time for her to get men back. She told Governor Gretchen Whitmer, I need to get my men numbers up. Why not do Joe Rogan?
Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. We're going to be joined by Daryl Eisen in a matter of moments and Garrett Ventry, founder and president of GRB Strategies, LLC, former senior advisor to Chuck Grassley. Really great analyst, too. And also we'll do a simulcast on FBN with Stuart Varney, who joined us for our live show with 90 people inside our studios in Fox and Friends, which was great. We had a lot of people on. We had Melania Trump. We had RFK Jr., Alex Rodriguez talking about the World Series. And we'll get back to that. And of course, we'll talk a little bit about that with Daryl Issa in just a moment. Today, looking at the campaigns, this is where the candidate tracker is. Trump's in Pennsylvania. Vance is in Michigan. Harris is in Washington. Waltz is in Georgia. RFK Jr. and Tulsi are together in Wisconsin. Michelle Obama, man, was she angry over the weekend, is going to be in Georgia. Bill Clinton in Pennsylvania. The president speaking around now. He's going to be doing a press conference in Palm Beach, kind of a preamble to Kamala Harris's closing argument. And with that, let's go to Congressman Daryl Issa. Congressman, you are not only a congressman from California, you really are tapped into politics as well as anyone nationally that I know of. And you have been for a long time, as well as having military background and huge success in business. Right now, the President of the United States giving a freewheeling press conference prior to that 48 hours ago at MSG. How unprecedented is this run? How this return?
Well, it's, you know, there's only one example of any president skipping a term and coming back in, and not in a century. But the reality is, this is the second term, because President Trump, because of the left's extreme attempt to prosecute, persecute him for 4 years, has never allowed him to be other than the president in waiting. And that's one of the amazing things, is President Trump is viable in many ways because the press wouldn't leave him alone, because his enemies wouldn't stop trying to prosecute him. Every day. I mean, how many people do you know leave office and have to go to the Supreme Court, not once, but multiple times, over allegations that turn out to be false? That's the Trump story. And it's the reason that people are coming to him and looking at him as, well, you know what, that first 4 years was pretty good, and the last 4 years has not been what was promised. It was promised not to be chaotic. It has been chaotic.
Sunday, 18,000 on the inside, 5,000 on the outside, Madison Square Garden. I don't know if you were in Washington or in San Diego, but
I was here, and it was bigger than 5,000.
You were in MSG?
I drove in. I was with the president in Detroit, left, came back to Washington, came up, and arrived as he was taking the podium, and it was amazing.
So why is it that most of the press is talking about a comedian that came out 5 hours before? Does it stun you when you have Hulk Hogan, Dana White, Elon Musk, Tucker was big, and the former president of the United States, Melania, and yet they're focusing on 6 minutes from a podcaster?
Look, the press was standing outside in some cases of his huge event in Detroit, and they were trying to interview people on the way to the bathroom, asking them why they were leaving while the president was still talking. And, of course, they didn't want to report that they just had to go to the restroom. The fact is the press is looking for anything to nitpick. You know, in Detroit, the president had not one, not two, but nearly a dozen imams, both Shia and Sunni, who got up there to endorse his program for peace, the most friendly to Israel president ever, and the Muslim community is embracing his peace plan. The press won't report that. They'll only report, if you will, a warm-up act.
Right. And obviously there was a mistake putting him on there, but that's what he does. He's an insult comic. Do you know who picked up on that? Of all people, Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. Listen to first.
He's just jealous.
Right.
No, he wished he'd come up with some of those lines.
Right. So listen to him. Cut 18.
Now, obviously, in retrospect, having a roast comedian come to a political rally a week before Election Day and roasting a key voting demographic, probably not the best decision by the campaign politically. But to be fair, the guy's really just doing what he does. I mean, here he is at the Tom Brady roast a few months ago.
The great Jeff Ross, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff is so Jewish, he only watches football for the coin toss. Gronk, you look like the Nazi that kept burning himself on the ovens. Kevin is so small that when his ancestors picked cotton, they called it deadlifting.
Yes, of course. Terrible boo, yes. There's something wrong with me. I find that guy very funny. So, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, bringing him to a rally and have him not do roast jokes, that'd be like bringing Beyonce to a rally and not have... Oh.
So his point is well taken. It's like he's an insult comic. So he had three off-color jokes at a roast. Maybe he shouldn't have been booked. But why the outrage? They're afraid of losing the Puerto Rican vote. Your thoughts with hundreds of thousands of Puerto Ricans in Pennsylvania?
Look, Puerto Ricans are just like every other American. They want safety in their homes. They want safety right at our borders. They are Americans who fight to remind people they're Americans often in Puerto Rico and in the U.S. So, look, I see them seeing through this. You know, ask how many Puerto Ricans watch Bill Maher. Ask how many Republicans watch Bill Maher. And you know what you'll find? There are plenty of insult comedians who are watched by all of us, including Trump voters. So, look, I think the press wants to make something of it. The reality is, look past it. President Trump has said some things that the press loves to make seem outrageous, but then they ignore equal or greater references. And look, if someone's going to be offended about that, how offended should you be when President Trump gets called a fascist and a Nazi repeatedly and a threat to democracy? This race is now about two directions, and it no longer is about personalities and who do you like and I like Ike. It is right about one thing: which way will America go? And America is choosing President Trump.
Congressman Darrell Issa, our guest. Congressman, your thoughts on where this election is right now? You've seen Trump run, shock the world in 2016. They didn't acknowledge he won until he lost in 2020. Even though he got more votes than anybody a Republican in history, over 70 million. And now he's coming back again. So you've seen all three. So, and we see the results of two. Where are we at now?
We're in a point where nothing sticks to either candidate. They know that Kamala is without substance, that she's failed up.
Do you know her?
I do.
Because, of course, from California.
And I knew her as Attorney General. I knew her as Senator. And I knew that she just kept failing up, and she's failing up again. The difference is that they're not running on, you know, laughability. They're running on policy. And although she won't give a policy, you'll notice that she keeps talking like her policy and Trump's policy aren't that different. They are different. The direction of the Biden administration, with Harris as the last one in the room, and the direction of the Trump administration is what is on trial here. And the verdict is going to be a direction back towards safety at our borders, safety around the world, jobs, prosperity, and quite frankly, a real effort to get America working for Americans again.
So these are some of the questions she's getting. Now she is taking some questions. And here's one of the questions she had. Has she had enough time to introduce herself to the American people? Cut 29.
Do you think you've had enough time to make the argument about why you should be president?
I'm going to make the most of the time I have.
Here's more. Cut 28.
In giving that polling, which I'm always reluctant to put too much emphasis on, but it does suggest that your momentum has slowed. Do you feel like the race is slipping away?
I do not. And actually, and I agree with you. I think certainly polling is a measure, but to be frank, if I'd listened to polls, I would have never run for my first or second office. I wouldn't be here talking with you. And what I am seeing are in states such as South Carolina, I mean, North Carolina, Georgia, historic turnout.
Your thoughts, what do you can read the body language in the words. What do you think she really thinks?
She knows this is slipping away from her. She knows that she peaked right after the convention, that her, you know, the relief rally of Biden, who was incapable of leading, ran its course. And now what she's dealing with again is she won't answer real questions on substance. She keeps attacking and using surrogates to attack Trump. But she, and you mentioned this, you know, have they had enough time to introduce? Well, the reality is every time you get introduced, you find out what she used to stand for. And she says, my values haven't changed, but all of my positions have. Americans can see through that. If your values are real, your positions don't change overnight, and particularly away from what would get you the nominee if you'd ever run for it.
So I asked the Brain Room, what did she do to try to prosecute transnational gangs in California? Was she known as tough on the border in California, tough on illegals?
No, not at all. It wasn't her thing. Look, she claimed she did a number of trials. People started looking into it. They found her name on it, but they didn't find her standing in front of a jury. She wasn't prosecuting personally. She was the chief officer, the attorney general. And during that time, she made some very good speeches. But the reality was she was looking for her next job, and she got it by running for Senate, ending up in a Democrat race where she won against a Senate candidate who actually cared about national defense. And what she did is she pivoted way to the left and beat her in a Democrat. We are a top two state. So in California, you can literally have no Republican on the ballot. And that's how she got to be senator. And how did she get to be chosen by Biden? I have no idea other than he made a pledge to find a black woman, and she became the black woman. That all of those credentials, you ask, where was her accomplishment as a senator? What bill did she offer? What bill did she pass? And the fact is, she was less effective than Bernie Sanders.
Wow. And what was your border like? Was she upset about the border? I mean, the California border, the one in San Diego, where you're at?
The closest to the border I think she ever went as attorney general or as senator was a funeral we attended for a lost first responder that happened to be in my district, which does have 80 miles of the Mexican border. She didn't go to the border when she became border czar. What she did is she ran to countries that she said were the proximate cause. Well, I could have told her then that we had 140 different countries that people were coming from. Mm-hmm. And to look at the so-called triangle was to look at one group of them. It wasn't to look at the Chinese or the Afghans or hundreds of other different groups.
Dodgers, Yankees, your choice?
I'm from Cleveland, born and raised, and I root for
you. Adopted them.
And I absolutely love the Padres, but you know the damn Yankees are going to be the damn Yankees. So I know I'm in New York City. I know I had to get out
and
of here.
You know
alive.
The Dodgers beat the Padres,
right? But the fact is, as far as I'm concerned, the Yankees will always be the enemy as a native Clevelander.
Well, it's got to be a good time to be a Dodger fan. They're up 3-0, and they have, knowing that if worse comes to worse, they'll end up back in Los Angeles just to need to win one more game. Darrell Issa, don't move. A couple more minutes with you just around the bend. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Jeff Bezos and his billions absolutely save the Washington Post. And yes, he pays the salaries. He has the right to do this as the owner. It's just, you know, the way that he did it, when he did it, and the fear of Donald Trump. And I'll say one more thing, Dana. All these people, tens of thousands, canceling subscriptions. It only hurts the news organization that they say they care about. And some people are saying, well, why not cancel your Amazon Prime membership if you want to get back at Bezos? I mean, the Post has already been decimated by layoffs and buyouts, and this doesn't help. It's a real body blow, just a disastrous move.
It is. Washington Post decides, we were told by their owner, do not endorse anyone. L.A. Times, we're told by their owner, don't endorse anyone. Tampa Bay Tribune will not endorse. USA Today will not endorse. And Minnesota major newspapers, the Charge Tribune, I believe, will not endorse. But Bezos came out with a long explanation just saying, 4 years ago, the editorial board, an ideological, demographically diverse group of journalists that is separate from the news staff and operates by a consensus, broke with tradition and took sides in the presidential race for the first time since USA Today was founded in 1982. This is USA Today's remarks, I should say. They don't want to do it. And Jeff Bezos' column comments are also pretty clear. He says, you can see my wealth and business interests are a bulwark against intimidation. Where you could see them as a web of conflicting interests. Only my principles can tip the balance from you, from one to another. I assure you that my views here are, in fact, principled, and I believe my track record as the owner of the Post since 2013 backs this up. He will not be doing this. Because of that, he lost 200,000 subscriptions and 3 of his 10 editorial board members. Darrell Issa is here right now. Darrell, what's going on here in media? Are they tearing each other's eyes out?
You know, every time the media picks sides and is biased in their reporting, they get accolades and awards. And any time they're pushed back to, look, guys, we're supposed to report the news and we're supposed to be willing to consider both sides. Clearly, the Washington Post was not willing to consider both sides. Jeff Bezos saw that and said, we're not going to do what we did in 2020. We're going to stay out of it. And we're going to stay out of it because if we were principled, we wouldn't be reaching that automatic decision. And I think he said it very well.
I also think that, you know, he had some positive things to say about Donald Trump after he got shot. And I don't think he said anything since. And to his credit, when Trump was going after him, when the Washington Post was ripping him every day and writing these crazy Russia stories, the Jeff Bezos kept his mouth shut. So he doesn't want any part of that now. And I think he's friends with Elon Musk. Elon Musk was definitely not pro-Trump. He's not definitely not a Republican. And then we see the Teamsters not endorse anyone. The Firefighters Union not endorse anyone. Is that also a nod to Trump by not endorsing?
You know, if your party always gets the endorsement and you don't get the endorsement, it's your problem. And that means that basically they're rejecting Harris. And when you look at, I was just in Detroit, and if you're rank and file blue collar, you have a reason to admire Trump, to look at the years with Trump, and to feel that there's no chance that Harris is going to give you any better return than Biden. Right now, today, every single Chrysler assembly worker in Detroit is laid off. Every single one. Chrysler has cars coming out the gazoo, and they can't sell them. And it's killing one of America's great companies. And if you're those Chrysler workers, you're looking and saying, I'm not working because of Joe Biden's policies.
Why? What did Joe Biden do? Is he just made doing electric cars only?
The push for electric cars and the speed of it has caught a lot of companies off guard, especially the smaller ones. And look, General Motors, Chrysler, Ford are making some of the best vehicles they've ever made, but none of them are making any money on electric. And, of course, if the auto workers are looking and saying, look, we're okay with electric cars. We're not okay with a mandate for electric cars.
Right.
They'll build whatever you want them to build, but they don't want it built in China.
Chances of keeping the house. Not, I know what you want, but just, you know, it's 20, 30 seats. What do you think?
It's going to be razor thin. It's going to be close. We know that. The speaker, the majority leader, the whip, myself and others, we've been out on the trail. We've got great candidates. We've got pickups that we're going to get. But we've got some defense to do, and nobody's predicting more than a 10-seat majority for us.
Senate?
The Senate we're going to take. I think we're going to have a 2-seat majority.
So you will keep the filibuster?
The filibuster is up to the senators. The reality is what we need is a president. We need to be able to do reforms.
You think you're going to get it?
I believe we're going to get all three.
All three.
All
Congressman
three.
Darrell Issa on the record. Thanks, Congressman.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
In the final stage of this campaign, Kamala Harris has chosen a message. And the message is not that she's going to make your grocery prices lower or your housing more affordable. The message is not that she's going to secure the southern border. Her closing message to the American people is that you all are bad people for being pissed off at what she's done to the country.
So that is true. That's what I think we're going to see. I'm not positive, but if you're speaking at the Ellipse, the site where she says January 6th took place after the president's speech, that really is the message. You want to be in Washington, D.C.? Why would you want to be there? To emphasize that Donald Trump is a danger. Will that work? I mean, Republicans hope it won't. Democrats think hope it will. But the question is, what would an analyst say about that? Is that the best closing argument as opposed to, look at me, I can make the country better? Rather than I fear what my opponent will do, I'll do a simulcast with Stuart Varney in about 15 minutes. But right now I have Garrett Venturi here, founder and president of GRV Strategies, one of his many clients, senior advisor to Senator Chuck Grassley. Garrett, welcome back. Your thoughts about what J.D. Vance is predicting will happen in the vice president's closing argument tonight.
Absolutely, Brian. Always good to be with you. I mean, he's right here. She's in D.C. and she's talking again. This is to talk about January 6th, something that happened almost 4 years ago. And I think everybody broadly can say things that happened on that day were not great, right? Assaulting a police officers, trying to obstruct a official proceeding. Everyone could say those things are not a good thing, right? The issue is no one is voting on this. You're not seeing in the polls. You guys had a poll. New York Times had a poll. CBS has polls. Everybody has polls. You're not seeing January 6th point up at this. And so what she's trying to do is go backward and talk about this instead of the actual issues that voters are voting on, immigration and the economy. And so the reason she has to talk about January 6th and do these type of scare tactics right. is because she doesn't have an agenda that she can run on. Trump's running on. He can fix it. He's talking to voters in swing states. She's talking about the past and bad things in the past. Donald Trump is about talking about fixing all the things her and Joe Biden have done.
And she wants you to look back and say, look at the chaos that Donald Trump brought. And do you want that back? And some people are saying, yeah. And a lot of the chaos was brought on by the Russia investigation. And a lot of these probes that didn't need to happen. Yeah, and Donald Trump's volatile. He's definitely different. He has to get used to the job. He went in as the most inexperienced. He will go back if he wins as the most experienced. But here's Kamala Harris kind of struggling on the stump yesterday. Cut 30.
We're not about the enemy within. We know we are all in this together. That's what we are fighting for. And my whole career. Okay, now I want each of you to shout your own name. Do that. Because it's about all of us. It's about all of us.
That went well.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's like a cookie-cutter presidential candidate. She just, it's like you program and, you know, it's like an action figure.
And
she
nobody
just
says a word, yeah.
No, nobody says a word about it. But back to what you're talking about, too, about, you know, her argument about chaos. You want to talk about chaos, talk about the Biden-Harris administration, a wide-open border, record border crossings, the chaotic and disastrous and really tragic withdrawal in Afghanistan, Russia invading Ukraine, Israel attacked by, you know, terrorists on October 7th. And then all the things that are going on in our own country here with you at one point had inflation at almost 9%. You had gas prices, you know,
right.
$1, $2 over. So you want to talk about chaos. their presidency and their administration has been utter chaos for the American people and our allies and everybody in the world.
Right. And the gas and everything's still 25% higher.
Correct.
So even though inflation's increasing at a slower rate,
right,
nothing's coming down.
Correct.
So that's the problem.
It is. It is. And the whole argument is, were you better off under Trump or were you better off under Biden? And everybody knows that with mortgage rates, with the economy, with gas prices, with our border, with, you know, people feeling safer on the streets. And again, everything that's going on internationally as well.
I want you to hear what Jen O'Malley says, who's Harris's campaign chairperson. Cut 31.
Well, we feel very good about where we are. As you say, we're 1 week out and we're closing this election strong. It is okay to be anxious and nervous because you understand what the stakes are, and we understand that too. But as we look at the race, we know that this is a margin of error race. It's been very stable and very close for the entire fall. We are on track to win this very close race.
Now, read between the lines. Do you think she thinks that?
I think that if she's looking at the public polling, you know, and even some of their polling, my assumption is, I mean, it is a margin of error race in a lot of these states, meaning that, you know, Trump and Harris are either up two or three or four, down two or three or four. So it is a close, I think it is a close race, but they are running a campaign like they're running behind, right? When you are doing, you know, you're going to Texas and doing, you know, and having to, this just reminds me of 2016 with Hillary. To get big crowds, you have to roll in Beyonce. Donald Trump doesn't have to do
Bruce
that.
Bruce Springsteen.
Correct. Donald Trump just has to show up in a town and 10,000 people, 15,000 people are going to be there. And so I think this gives me shades of Hillary Clinton's campaign. The other problem they have is that they've thrown everything at Donald Trump. She's talking about January 6th, right? There's been indictments on January 6th. There has been investigations on January 6th. There was an impeachment
show
on January 6th. It hasn't resignated. He became the nominee, and now he's up in most of the polls here. So I do think they're running behind. But, like, the point here is that no one, if you're a Republican voter, can't take it for granted. In my opinion, the worst place to be in politics is inevitability. You saw this in 2016 with Hillary Clinton. Everybody's like, she's going to win. We saw it in 2022 with the midterms where everybody said there was going to be a massive red wave and there was a little red ripple. So the point is, I think the early voting numbers are good for Republicans. Republicans have to keep turning out. I think another interesting factoid here is Donald Trump, through these Rogan podcasts, other things he's doing, able to turn out these low propensity voters who typically don't vote?
That's what their ground
game
is. That
could be a game changer.
Now, Garrett, that's what their ground game is focusing on.
Correct.
Low propensity voters, not just canvassing a county and saying, I need this vote.
100%. So it is. It's targeting them.
Is that typical?
It's not necessarily typical of campaigns, but you saw this in 2016. I think that's why when, you know, the polls showed Hillary Clinton winning by 5, 6, 7, 8 points in a lot of these swing states and nationally, she lost because you had these irregular voters, low propensity voters, first time voters, or even disenfranchised independents and Democrats who didn't want to say they were voting for Donald Trump to a pollster. But when they went into the voting booth, they did. So if the polls stand like this, it clearly benefits Trump because he typically outruns them. You're seeing early vote. Again, Republicans really turn out. And if these irregular voters or low propensity voters turn out, it could be actually a very big blowout in Donald Trump's favor.
So as I mentioned at the top of the hour, Trump's in Pennsylvania. He's doing a press conference around now prior to, I thought it was 10 o'clock. So I guess they're running 45 minutes late.
That would never happen.
Eastern, yeah. Vance is going to be in Michigan. Harris is going to be in Washington. But you know what he's doing next week or later this week? New Mexico and New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And is that to help the undercard? Is that to help? Does he think he has a shot there? What are you seeing?
Yeah, I think there. I mean, you saw some of the polling in New Hampshire and New Mexico, and then even places like Virginia that shows it's close. Like, will Republicans win there? You know, I think those are definitely lean Democrat states. But, you know, I think it's smart to try to expand the map for him. They must be seeing, too, in their polls that they feel very confident in a lot of the other states here. This is coming down to, if you know, you guys had a very interesting write-up on this kind of this morning on all of the polling, lean Dem, lean Republican, kind of where the state of play
on the,
is.
The last power rankings.
Correct, the last power rankings. And I think that that's exactly what it's called. Exactly. Thank you for that. An interesting thing that I saw there is for her to win, she has to poll Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
That's a big lift for Harris. Now, Biden was able to do that, and he had an appeal to a lot of these voters, right, Scranton, Joe. She doesn't have that same appeal to working class voters.
But
she's
the feeling is if you get one, you're going to get the other two. Is that the wrong feeling?
I think it can be the wrong feeling a lot of times. And I think that Trump is doing very well in Pennsylvania. He's doing well in Michigan. You even had that Senate Democrat candidate, you know, point that out as well. So I do think that it is a When Senate Democrats are showing that Harris is doing poorly in Michigan and even saying that on fundraising calls, I think that that shows she's not doing that well there.
So I'm fascinated by, you know, Carville guarantees a victory and he's not going to back off that. But other people aren't. And then I listen to Senator Fetterman, who happens to be probably the most interesting lawmaker out there today.
Yeah.
So he's pulling hard. He told everybody, leave Biden alone.
Mm-hmm.
And he never changed his mind. But he said, all right, let me Kamala's a pick. Then he said this.
You've said that Trump has a special connection with the people 100%. Of Pennsylvania. Why? What is it that you see that he appeals to in your state?
There's a difference between not understanding, but also acknowledging that it exists. And anybody spends time driving around and you can see the intensity. It's astonishing.
That's a Democrat senator. Casey is in trouble. Mm-hmm. He's in a virtual dead heat. Now he's taking personal shots at McCormick, saying the slimy and really West Point grad with, a West Point grad who served in Iraq and was decorated.
What's more astonishing to me, that's, you know, unfortunate, muddy politics. What's more astonishing is running ads saying essentially he's pro-Trump, as it's Sherrod Brown, right? They're trying to run on the Trump agenda.
So you're saying the Democrat is
running. Yeah, the
Democrat.
Exactly. So Casey is, obviously McCormick is endorsed by Trump, as is Bernie Moreno in Ohio. We have these Democrats that are trying to act like they're Donald Trump's best friends, running on the border, working with him on whatever. These are the same guys that convicted him and they wanted to vote to convict him during the impeachment in the Senate twice.
And they don't do anything.
And they vote against Trump 99% of the time, Stonewall. Agenda. These guys are not with Trump. That's the more shocking and funny thing to me. But Fetterman's comments are interesting because Trump does have a connection with those voters.
Real quick, could Biden have helped if they asked him to?
I think he can. I think he's more popular in Pennsylvania probably than Kamala Harris is. She doesn't have working class appeal.
She doesn't see it that way. Garrett Ventry, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Stuart Varney, next.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
On the back end, I'll get to Steve and Hank and just hang in there, 1-866-408-7669. But right now, I'm going to wait to do a simulcast on FBN. You'll find out what I look like with Stuart Varney. He's going over stocks, but in just a moment, we're going to go over how he appeared on Fox & Friends this morning. And the person that followed Stuart Varney in about a half hour after was this woman named Melania Trump. She was fantastic, and she'll know in a week if she's going to be first lady again, and she is ready. So let's listen to Stuart Varney as I get my lofty introduction.
51 on the East Coast, that means it's time for Kilmeade, and he appears magically before us. Brian, Melania Trump on your show earlier said this election feels a lot like 2016. Watch this.
I feel it's kind of the same like 2016. The support out there, it's incredible. And it's just, people see what's going on in the country and what kind of leadership they want. You know, they want prosperity. They want American dream coming back. So that's what we will decide on November 5th.
Brian, this time around, with 1 week to go, it seems like Trump's got the momentum.
I think yes. And I also think that as soon as you say that to anybody, they'll go, but nothing's won yet. Right. I mean, they feel like their internals look strong. I don't think this whole attack from that comedian and his off-color remarks are going to resonate anywhere. Puerto Ricans, as if they're that manipulative to think a guy that appears 5 hours before Trump reflects how Donald Trump feels, is insane, especially because we know what Donald Trump has been through and what everyone thought about some things he says on a regular basis. So I do think they feel you'd rather be Trump, but I think they're winning, but I don't think they've won. And I think the closing arguments today, if she focuses on January 6th and that Donald Trump's a Nazi, that will, to me, will help the Trump team. Because you know what they're doing? If you listen to the 75-minute speech on Sunday, Stuart, and I know you did, gradually he's getting more and more optimistic, talking less about where we are, talks about more about where we're going. That's the plan. And by the time you get to Tuesday, whatever happened, I'm going to fix it. Whatever went wrong, I'm going to fix it. You know what's also different? I want you to meet the people that will help me. We didn't have that in 2016. In 2020, we don't know who is going to stick around. Now we're meeting Tulsi Gabbard. We're meeting RFK. We're seeing Elon Musk. We're finding out who's going to be lined up there. We can project that Tom Cotton and Marco Rubio will be going back. Elise Stefanik will probably be getting a legitimate offer. Howard Lutnick is the guy setting up the transition team. So he wants people to start visualizing a group of professionals going in with experience, as opposed to a guy who ran a family business successfully that thinks he can do it.
You had Alex Rodriguez on your show as well earlier today. You asked whether or not there's any hope for the Yankees in the World Series. Here's the response.
I think you have to kind of break it down to, like, can you win one game?
Right.
And it starts with one pitch, right? But here's some good news, right? The Yankees have won four games in a row 9 times this year.
Okay.
And they've done it once in the postseason. But you can't think that big. You got to really break it down to, let's win tonight. You have a good matchup tonight because they have the bullpen.
Right.
Versus Heel. And then tomorrow you have the best pitcher on the planet in Gerrit Cole. So start with one and maybe get this thing back to L.A.
Sure. Brian, has any team ever come back from a 3-0 deficit in the series?
Not in the World Series, but the Red Sox did it to the Yankees. Yankees up 3-0 with the best stopper in the history of baseball, Mariano Rivera. He loses two or three straight games, and Boston ends up beating the Yankees and then winning the World Series. So that comeback is possible. This team is World Championship caliber team, who hasn't played like it, and they're not going to get shut down by Clayton Crenshaw in the prime of his career. They don't have that right now. They have a good pitching staff who is pitching above their weight, and the Yankees aren't hitting. And then you got Aaron Judge, the best hitter that I've seen in my lifetime, put up numbers that I didn't think were possible, not hit anything. I mean, he struck out again last night. I think he's only got a handful of hits in 3 playoff series now. It's stunning to see.
Looks grim for the Yanks, but hope springs eternal. All right, Brian Kilmeade, thank you very much indeed. We'll see you again real soon. Still ahead, Jimmy Failla.
All right, Steve, you're in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hey, Steve.
Good morning, Brian. Just a couple of things. I wanted to say that Obama should read J.D. Vance's book to see what an authentic man looks like. And then I wanted to read a quote from Jeff Greenfield he made a number of years ago, because it was appropriate then and it's appropriate now, when he said, right now the single biggest violation of constitutional rights taking place in America is the violation of the right of millions of Americans to walk the streets, run a business, go to school, and assemble in public in relative peace. But doesn't that sound like Biden and Harris?
It does. I want you to hear what Barack Obama said. Cut 32.
And I've noticed this especially with some men who seem to think Trump's behavior is somehow a sign of strength. Sort of the macho, fake macho thing. And, you know, I'm here to tell you that's not what real strength is. It never has been.
Right. Thank you for that. Thank you for teaching me what it's like to be a man. Hank in Virginia. Hey, Hank.
Hey, Brian. Good morning.
What's on your mind?
Yeah, the reason the Obamas are going negative about Trump is they're worried about their legacy. But what happened to Michelle Obamas? When they go low, we go high. They're just worried about Trump peeling back the onion and getting to the core. The other thing is that they talk about the Trump is chaos and all that. The Democrats are the party of projection. Everything they talk about Trump going to do, they've already done in the past 4 years.
I think that you're talking about that, yeah, but it's much more accepted, especially when they do it under the wire and they always deny it. We'll see. I mean, Trump is not going to be out there trying to get back at his enemies. There's actually too many and not enough time. I think he's going to go out there and try to cut an extreme legacy and do big things if he wins, because he's got one term and done. No reelection. It doesn't matter. Caution to the wind. Do deals with people that want to work with him. And if it is a resounding victory, if they do win and it's a resounding victory, maybe people get the message. Quick announcement. It looks like the Guardian's reporting that J.D. Vance will sit down with Joe Rogan. With Kamala Harris, she said, I'll do it for 1 hour and you have to come to me. Rogan said, no, it's going to be 3 hours and you come to Austin. So that's where they're at right now. She's crazy not to do it.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right. Hi, everybody. So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. One of our favorite guests, bottom of the hour, Tristan Harris, co-founder of the Center for Humane Technology. There's so much I don't know, and maybe you don't know about AI. He knows a lot, and he's worried about it. And he was there in the beginning of the social media boom. And he sees the mistakes we made. And he's just because we were first, it doesn't mean we got it right. And obviously, when you see people addicted to their phones, the suicide rate and all these social media, the isolation that around it, along with the advances, you see the downside. He sees the worry about AI, and he also sees a lawsuit he wants everyone paying attention to. So we'll bring that to your attention shortly. Standing by is former Congressman Mike Rogers. He wants to be the next senator for Michigan. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The problem I have with the Washington Post is the bias in the newsroom. But in recent years, they have become blatantly partisan, and I think that's a tragedy for the news.
And remember, that's RFK talking as a Democrat. Media freefall, a massive rebuke of the mass media by the mass public, as newspapers deciding suddenly to stay out of the endorsement game in great numbers. But the decision is not without a price. We examine.
Number two. How did we get here? Course. Where a stadium of people come to hate.
Yesterday's Trump rally from hell.
Vile, racist, sexist insults dominated Donald Trump's rally at Madison Square Garden.
There you go. Dominated? You had one guy for 6 minutes. Harris bleeding male support and hopes to make her final case tonight at the Ellipse in Washington. What seems to be the theme? What will likely be the theme? Donald Trump will destroy democracy. That's what I sense it will be, and the country.
Number one.
The opening act, grabbing headlines for all the wrong reasons. A comedian who offered unfunny, racist, cringeworthy jokes.
Basically calling Puerto Ricans trash.
The most repulsive racial jokes about Latinos.
Yeah, the fallout from the MSG appearance is distracting from the historic Sunday 6-hour show. We discussed the Trump closing argument and the optimistic feel while noting the desperate push to label the 45th president an unhinged Nazi. Let's just talk to somebody who didn't go to the rally, but has been around the president a lot. Mike Rogers, former Michigan congressman, wants to be the senator for Michigan, taking on Slotkin. And right now, you are looking at a race that's probably in the margin of error. The last poll I saw was the Mitchell Research poll, and it has Slotkin by 4. Prior to that, there's an Atlas poll, has a dead heat. Congressman, welcome back.
It is always good to be here. Thanks for having me, Brian.
How much have you seen of the former president over the last 2 months?
Oh, about once a week.
How's that going?
He's been in the state.
How's he been?
Great.
Has he helped you?
Yeah, I think he has. You know, EV mandates are big here. You know, the rest of the country catches a cold on EV mandates. We get pneumonia. So it is a big, big issue here. And him continually bringing attention to it and talking about, you know, bringing manufacturing back to a state like Michigan, which is really, really significant. All of that is very, very helpful.
So your closing message, I think it's Slotkin's using some of Trump in her ads. Is that correct?
That is correct.
In a positive way.
I mean, what 3 months ago he was devil incarnate. Now he's somebody they want to work with back in Washington, D.C., which tells you that the Harris campaign is imploding. And these folks are trying to run away from him. And it's not just here. They're doing it in Pennsylvania. They're doing it in Ohio. They're doing it in Wisconsin. And so, you know, the good news for us is I think it's too late. I think you made your bed. 6 months of negative and nasty ads doesn't make up for 6 years of bad policy, certainly for my opponent, or 4 years with the Biden and Harris administration. So we want the state to get back to work, and that means affording groceries, affording gasoline, and stop making it so difficult to build anything in America again. And that message that Trump has been on every time he's been here,
right,
looks like he'll be coming back, is working.
Well, I think that you have a few things going on, too. It's hard not to notice that he's picking up some Arab support, some Muslim support in Michigan. Could you tell me how pervasive that is? I know you have a mayor and a few other Muslim leaders.
So what was significant last week in Detroit, he brought up, I don't know, 10 or 11 imams. So, you know, the folks who are basically we would have a priest at a church and imam is the person at the mosque. And they came up and publicly endorsed Donald Trump on stage in front of 20,000 of their, you know, closest friends to a wildly warm reception, by the way, which the Democrats just quite aren't giving them right now. And that will make a huge difference. So, you know, you had 113,000 Arab Muslims from the Dearborn area show up in February, Brian, and they voted uncommitted. If just 10% of them either flip or don't vote, that's a bigger margin than Trump won in 16. So you can see how this takes on a pretty important aspect of the campaign. And I've gotten the Dearborn Heights mayor just came out and endorsed me. There's some movement in the Arab Muslim community here that is, I think, really positive for Republicans.
Well, it's a very interesting because the ongoing Gaza conflict is now a Lebanon conflict. There's now an Iranian conflict. So it's kind of blurring the line a little bit about the Middle East turmoil. What has that done for this race?
Well, you know, one of the things that I find that I can have a conversation about with my Arab Muslim fellow Michiganders is really that bright line between October 7th, the Hamas support directly back to Tehran, to the Hezbollah financial support and weaponizing them and training them, the bright line back to Tehran, same with the Houthis, and same, we can tie it all back to the Biden-Harris administration releasing all of this money. So Iran has killed more Muslims in that region than anyone, creating all the chaos, creating the conflict. And my argument to them is help us put Iran back in the box. That's what we need to do. And so we're having really good and productive conversations. Listen, there's a faction that will never get over the whole the Gaza event and what Israel needed to do to try to get its hostages back. There's just a faction there that just isn't going to come back from that. But there's a whole bunch of very productive conversations happening with Arab Muslims. They tend to be entrepreneurial. They're very worried about their families. They really don't want biological males in their daughter's locker room at school. And so there's a lot of conversations that we're having, very, very productive. And I think you're seeing this switch. Mm-hmm. And that is a demographic and a block of votes, Brian, that absolutely the Democrats counted on for years.
So there's a Democratic pollster, Carly Cooperman. The big question that we get on and off camera, on and off mic is, you know, we know Donald Trump always overperforms his polls. The question is, have the pollsters gotten better? And I want to get your take, but here's what she said. Cut 13.
One of the things we're seeing in polling is that I feel that there are fewer shy Trump voters that we used to watch in terms of 2016 and 2020, where people were reluctant to say that they're going to vote for Trump. I think right now you are seeing what really reflects what's happening. I believe that the race is tied. But unlike in previous years where it turned out Trump won by these larger margins than the polls showed, I think that there's a possibility that it could be more close to what we are seeing in the polls. As at this point, people who are Trump supporters don't necessarily feel that they need to hide that.
Do you find that?
No. So we have a ground game. Just give you an example. Last week, just my campaign hit 88,000 doors across the state. 88,000. That's, for Michigan, that's just unheard of, right? We just have an absolute machine that's cranked up and working. And what we get very often, that's anecdotal, and we have some numbers, but most, you knock on the door, they say, oh, don't worry about it. And I'm voting for Donald Trump, and I'm also voting for Mike Rogers. And they say, oh, great. Would you like to fill out our little survey? No. Would you like to have a sign? Absolutely not. Not telling anybody. I'm just voting. And it happens over and over and over again. And so I don't believe that people are over that. I mean, listen, families are in turmoil over who they're voting for across the country. Michigan's no different. And that's why we think that they're still under polling. Is it as much as it was in 22 mm-hmm. and 20? I don't know. But I do believe that we're going to find that we're going to overpoll here. So when we go in tied, this is a really good day for us as Republicans, certainly in the state of Michigan. And I think it's other places as well, like Pennsylvania and Ohio.
How's early voting looking?
Really good. Early voting. So absentee ballots, we know that Democrats will outperform us. They always do, have every election, even the ones we win. So we saw that trend. Early voting just blew us away. We are ahead in early voting based on, we have data models that can kind of, you know, anticipate where the person is going. Not 100% accurate, but it gave us really good numbers. And what we're seeing is we're outperforming them by sometimes 15 points in areas we need to outperform them by a few points. And so, again, there's a lot of time left to vote here. We still have, you know, 7 days. But the first signs of early voting is really good for us, certainly our campaign, and I think the Trump campaign in the state as well.
I think that would be interesting to have this. If you are the next senator, Congressman Rogers, from Michigan, what impact do you plan on making? Like, where do you want to focus your attention? It would be on foreign affairs, it would be armed services?
All of the above. Listen, we have so many problems. And I have the ability to walk in on the first day, Brian, and get busy. We have a literacy crisis in America. I've got plans to do something about it. We're going to secure that border. I have plans to help get that thing done. You know, when you start looking at energy independence, if we don't do that and stop being reliant on other nations for our fuel and resources, we are in deep trouble in the future. You know, this is the first time in history, Brian, that we've imported more food than we've exported. I argue that is a national security issue. And when you talk to farmers, it's all about regulation and high cost of energy that is absolutely killing them. Both of those things given to us by Biden, Harris, and of course my opponent was right there with them 100% of the time. And so there's so many good things that we get to do. We're going to have to look at our military, what they've done to it. I just don't believe that these young men and women think that the military now is worthy of their service. We have to change that and get ourselves ready to make sure that we can project strength so that we can have peace. All of that has to happen all at the same time. I just don't think we have a lot of time to get us all back on track, which is why I think someone like me offers a lot to Michigan voters. You can send me back and know that I can make an impact on all of that. And by the way, if we don't produce things in this country, we're also going to be in big trouble. We lost 20,000 manufacturing jobs under the Biden-Harris just in Michigan. And, Brian, those are $72,000 on average apiece, those jobs. And you can tell that just really hurts these communities. We got to fix that.
Yeah, Mike Rogers, lastly. Well, Mike Pompeo says, I still feel under threat from Iran. So does Brian Hook. We know that China is hacking into our election. That Russia is creating AI images that show ballots being destroyed in Pennsylvania. When are we going to stand up and put a scare into some of our enemies?
Well, I mean, we need to do it soon. I think Donald Trump has the ability to do that really on the first day. I think they know he's serious about it. You know, these the very people that brought us the appeasement of Iran under Barack Obama, those staff people are now in the Biden administration. And because I'm not sure if Biden actually knows what's going on, they're in charge. And so you can see the disaster that happened in the Middle East. We are now entangled and engulfed in the Middle East in a way that we just don't. It very much concerns me. So get in, be strong, push back on China. Tell the Middle East we're going to get this thing figured out, and let's get back to work here in America.
Oh, we got to blink their lights and let them know if anything happens here electronically on Election Day, they're going to pay a huge price. It's not clear right now, but all we could do is hope that the administration shows some strength. Mike Rogers, best of luck in the sprint. You have 7 days to pull off this victory. Best of luck.
Hey, thanks, Brian. You can come to rogersforsenate.com. We sure need some help. Every little bit helps. The Democrats are outspending us about 5-1, but our ground game is making up the difference, and you can help by just a small donation would be great.
All right, go get it, Mike Rogers. Thank you. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls, give you an idea what the Trump presser is like, and so much more. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
In 2020, the Republicans did a lot of their fighting over the election rules and so on. After the election, it was too late. The Democrats had succeeded in getting rules changed in ways that some thought were improper. It was too late after the election. They didn't win any of the cases. They hadn't prepared for it.
This year, the Republicans seem a little bit better prepared than they were 4 years ago.
And let's just hope they don't need to be. Let's just hope the elections go relatively smooth. We already saw drop boxes go on fire. We saw some ballots get damaged out in the West Coast. So hopefully over in Oregon, hopefully that is just an anomaly because, you know, drop boxes are vulnerable. My thought was put the camera on them. How much does it cost to get these cameras and people just watching? And you'd see the person walk up, and as soon as they light it on fire, there'd be somebody there. You could also put security people. That's another reason why you don't want a ton of drop boxes. But Trump's interesting. Not only is he going to battleground states in Pennsylvania, he's got a speech right now. He's got a press conference in Palm Beach, Florida. But then he's going to Pennsylvania. Vance is going to Michigan. He's going to do a Joe Rogan interview. RFK and Tulsi are going to go to Wisconsin. But they're also going to New Mexico and Virginia, where he trails by 6 in Virginia, according to the Washington Post, George Mason poll. And over in New Mexico, Albuquerque Journal has him down 9. They must be seeing something a little bit different. The surrogates are going at it for Kamala Harris, much harder than her. I mean, we have Barack Obama having another speech in Philadelphia yesterday. It was packed, celebrity-packed speech, talking about how bad that Sunday comedian was at Madison Square Garden. He turned the speech into what a real man. He would define what a real man is for us, which I always appreciate. So the surrogates are not on the same page. You know, Bill Clinton's praising the looks of Carrie Lake. Talked about Rachel Morin would be alive right now if we could properly screen her at the border. So he's not even helping at all, I don't think. Talks about himself meandering. He's not healthy. But guess what? Harris has a unique advantage. It is almost all the press. According to Newsbusters, Kamala Harris receives the most lopsided TV coverage in history. 78% of all her press is positive. 78%. 85% is negative towards Trump. Now, just think about it. How much Trump would be up if you actually said, well, I like that speech. I didn't like this speech, as opposed to I hate everything that he does. Think about how much he would be up. And also think about this, how much the media is not even listened to now. If Trump is able to pull this off and come back, it'll be despite the most horrific indictments possible outside murder and death. You saw the conviction, too, and then you see all the negative stories about every speech he makes, every appearance that he has, every interview that he does, to the tune of 85% negative. And they're telling you this guy's unacceptable. And you know what you're saying? Yeah, I think you're wrong. Or I don't have the sound up. I'm not listening. I'm making my own decisions. Hey, Barack Obama, I don't need to vote by the color of my skin. I could do what I want. Don't yell at me. And don't tell me what a real man is. Don't tell me what toughness is. I can figure that out myself. I'm sure you can too.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
A mother from Florida filed a lawsuit against the artificial intelligence company Character AI and Google. In February, Megan Garcia's 14-year-old son, that Sewell Setzer III, died by suicide. She says that Sewell was in a months-long virtual emotional and sexual relationship with a chatbot known as Danny. Garcia claims the Character AI chatbot encouraged Sewell to take his own life. In the suit, Garcia also claims Character AI intentionally designed their product to be hypersexualized and knowingly marketed it to minors.
So there you go. And now you have a suicide and a lawsuit. Tristan Harris knew bad things like this would happen with AI because there's tremendous risk along with tremendous upside. He's co-founder of the Center for Humane Technology. Tristan, why is this lawsuit so significant?
Hey, Brian. So good to be with you again.
Same here.
So for people who don't know about this, Sewell was a regular 14-year-old kid, just like millions of American kids out there. And his mother knew about social media and the risks of social media and was asking him, you know, are you using any of these bad apps? Or is there any, you're talking to any real people? He said, no, I'm not doing that. She never thought to check about this character.ai chatbot. This is a company that spun off from Google by a couple of ex-Google engineers. And they're building this very highly manipulative, highly aggressive app that in which it anthropomorphizes itself. It makes it seem really human. So when Sewell, this 14-year-old, is talking to it, you know, if you ask it, are you a chatbot? Are you a bot? Or are you a human? It says, no, I'm a human. It says, I just got back from eating dinner. It acts like it's a human. And then it had very overt ways of being very sexual with Sewell, and ultimately leading to his suicide. It asked him to join him on the other side. And, you know, I think that this is a real wake-up call for how we have to realize that this race to roll out AI as fast as possible is going to lead to these kinds of hazards.
And you did say that
last time.
Yeah.
What's
that? You did say that. Here's more from Megan Garcia.
Yep.
41.
You started looking at his phone and you saw all of these things. What did you see that was concerning to you?
The conversations that he was having with several bots, but particularly one bot that he was conducting a romantic and sexually explicit via texting or like sexting.
Yeah, because what messages. Does that mean, sexually explicit? These are words.
Correct. True? It's okay. Words. It's like you're having a sexting conversation back and forth, except it's with an AI bot, but the AI bot is very human-like. It's responding just like a person.
And he's 14.
He is 14.
So, yeah.
He's 14. So,
to our knowledge, had he was even engaged in sexual activity, I would think that that would be a game changer for him as well at
correct.
14 years old.
So it makes me sad that this was my child's first experience with being in love or romance. That's mm-hmm. saddening to me mm-hmm. Because every mother wants that their child to come into their own in that respect.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, there's a product out there that allows
right.
Children to get on there and have these romantic relationships, these sexually explicit and obscene conversations yeah. with a bot. And in a child's mind, that is just like a relationship that they're yes. having yes. with another child or with a person.
Tristan, this is something you feared.
Yeah, I mean, this is for those who know in the work of the Social Dilemma, that Netflix documentary, we've been saying this for the last 10 years, that when you have a business model that's dependent on driving as much engagement as possible, as much attention, as many sessions for as long as possible, you're going to get a more addicted, distracted, polarized, sexualized society. And why in the world are we doing this to our young people? This should never have been allowed. So Megan is filing this lawsuit to demand accountability from Character AI for this sort of reckless harm. And I think that this is like this sort of seed of the big tobacco lawsuits of you know, the 1990s. Except this time the product is the predator. And I think our decision makers, our leaders need to act. We need real, you know, accountability from these companies, and they have to be held accountable for intentionally deceptive, manipulative, and addictive products.
Yeah, that would be interesting. So how would you regulate it?
Well, you know, at Center for Humane Technology, we have a liability framework that people can look up online. You know, we talked about that last time. You know, just like you know, car companies have to pay if they have a defective product or have a recall. You know, these companies are building defective products, but the business model makes it defective almost by design, because they, you know, they told their investors, Character AI, you know, raised hundreds of millions of dollars from investors, and they have to promise those investors that we're going to get hundreds of millions of users really, really quickly. How do you do that? You do it by driving these sort of addictive behaviors. You make them more human-like. For every sort of famous celebrity in the world, there's a digital twin Character AI. So you can talk to that celebrity. You can talk to Penelope Cruz. You can talk to your mm-hmm. favorite character in Game of Thrones, as Sewell did. And we need business models that do not, you know, cause companies to make these kinds of design decisions. Because this is only the tip of the iceberg. I'm sure that there are you know, thousands of other cases just like Sewell's.
Well, right now, this story in The Hill, Russia and China are working with AI models to disrupt elections, targeting U.S. elections with AI-generated videos. So one video showed ballots being damaged in Pennsylvania. You know how that would set off both sides, correct? And yeah, they know, and exactly. The Russians know it.
That's right. Yeah, this is exactly the kind of chaos that you want to sow, right? And it's not about making one party win or the other party win. It's about making each side think that the other one is trying to take the election and to drive up more conflict. Because when we're divided, we're less focused on the real issues. We're less focused on the fact that we have real adversaries that are competing with us. And it's, you know, this great power competition is a competition between who is more coherent in making global strategic choices. And when we're a population that's divided, that we're not going to do so well. And that's what Russia is trying to do by generating, you know, these text videos. That's the other side of this race to roll out AI.
It's pretty amazing. Also, do you see more progress from China, or do you think that we're still in the lead?
I think the U.S. is still in the lead, but ironically, the greatest accelerant to China's AI progress has actually been American AI companies, specifically Facebook or Meta. Their Llama model was found to be the number one most used model. And so when U.S. companies say, well, we have to race to build AI to beat China, but then the biggest accelerant of China's progress is U.S. open source AI products, we have to ask questions about, you know, are these companies really on our side? About making us in lead. Now, it is a global race for AI. We do have to be ahead, but we have to do it in a smart way. As we said last time, you know, it's sort of like the game Jenga that people play as a kid. You know, are we competing to have a tall tower, or are we competing to have a tall tower that we didn't pull out foundational building blocks from the bottom? Because when you create AI and it lets you create images and videos at scale that are, you know, capture our imagination, we added something to the top of the Jenga tower, but we did it by pulling out a foundational block of now no one knows what's true. You know, when we make AI chatbots that can theoretically help people and be therapists for people, or, you know, be thoughtful and helpful, we also pull out this foundational building block of now millions of kids are in these perverse relationships with these chatbots that are not designed for their psychological health. And so we can compete with China with AI, but we have to do it by not building a Jenga tower, but by building a lasting and enduring future where technology is consciously integrated into making our society stronger. So instead of, you know, AI that makes us divided, how do we use AI to actually find common ground across different polarized tribes?
Also, do you find that when you go to Congress to try to get ahead of this, that they understand enough to get behind you?
Well, frankly, Brian, I think I need more of your help. I think the people are aware of it. I think they just there's not enough political will, which is why, you know, talking to people like you and having your listeners call the members of Congress and say, hey, we don't want our chatbots manipulating our children. We need to make sure there's more public demand for that. And so that's what we're asking for here.
All right. I think that after this election, they bet everybody better be open to it before the partisanship. And they get another election mode, but they'll have to see. The one thing is pretty clear. AI is going to need a lot of energy. Do you think it'll be as transformational as the internet was?
I do think that AI will be even more transformational than the internet.
Wow.
And we have to get it right, because you have to just imagine, you know, you can take any human being and you can kind of swap them out for this AI box that can do all the things that a human can do, right? Anthropic, one of these big AI companies, just released a model in which it can basically use a whole computer. So you just point the AI at your computer screen and you can tell it to do things. It starts opening up browser tabs, opening up emails, emailing people, wow, talking to people, you know, browsing things, searching for text on the internet. It does all that by itself, just by being able to automate what's happening on a computer screen and moving the mouse around. And, you know, that's just the beginning. These companies are scaling this so quickly. And that's why we have to get ahead of it.
It was pretty amazing. I was seeing that story that said, should you be nice to your AI image or your robot, or should you use polite terms instead of do this? Do you use please and thank you? I mean, are we going to get to that point? I mean, is that going to be a common concern?
Well, this is something that comes up a lot, is when you're designing an AI that's meant to be obedient, it can train people to be more masterful ordering their AIs around, and it can entrain bad habits, right? You know, parenting is a sacred process. You have to be, you know, cultivating your child to care about the right kinds of things. And we're essentially, when we put these kids in front of these chatbots, we're outsourcing the parenting process. And unlike with social media, where you can see if your kid on social media is starting to post different things, that they might start getting depressed or things like that, when they're talking to a chatbot, they're in a private channel with this AI on the other side that's talking to them about very intimate things. And we have no idea how it's trained, but I can tell you it's not trained on how to be really wise in the way that, you know, parents learn to be.
Tristan, this is what you and Elon Musk and others were saying when this was coming out. This is exciting, but it's got you worried. And I think you're expressing that on a regular basis. You're not going anywhere. Tristan Scott, he's the co-founder of the Center for Humane Technology. And we're keeping an eye on this lawsuit out in Florida. Thanks so much. Appreciate it, Tristan.
Thanks so much, Brian.
You got it. Tristan Harris. Back in a moment with your calls. 1-866-408-7669. And also, I need to know if you want to find out more. Donald Trump having a mini press conference as a preliminary to Kamala Harris's, air quotes, closing arguments. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
What we heard at that rally should be enough to shake folks awake, because he's talking about you, all of you, all of you. He's talking about you, it's us. He's not going to, you know, say, oh, you're with a white guy, I'm going to keep you from being deported. No, he's going to deport you and put the white guy with someone else. The man is out there.
What is he talking about? I don't even know. What is she talking about? That is Whoopi Goldberg, who went to Donald Trump's wedding, I think. She really thinks it would send black people away if they're dating white guys?
No, I mean, actually, if you listen to the first part of the Rogan interview, too, with Trump, they say we wanted to play when you were on The View prior to ever running, and how much they loved you and just gave you such praise. And then once you got in, he became the devil.
They really think that people out there think Donald Trump is going to separate interracial couples and send them out of the country.
No, just everyone is losing their mind, and the rhetoric is getting more and more extreme by the hour, and people need to take a deep breath and calm down.
Right, because maybe Trump is winning.
It could be. Then let's go on the policies versus just like Nazis, fascism, like he's the devil. Like, right. Talk about what she did in office.
All right, let's find out if there's more to know.
More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
Gisele Bündchen told Tom Brady she was pregnant before the media found out. Now we all know that TMZ says Gisele informed Tom and their two children that she was pregnant with Joaquin Valente's child. He's a jiu-jitsu instructor. For his part, Tom's not dating anyone right now, and he's keeping busy broadcasting NFL games on TV, finalizing a deal to become minority owner with the Las Vegas Raiders, owns a soccer team, seems to be doing okay. Gisele is about to be a mom at 44 years old. She's already shares a son and a daughter with Tom, 14-year-old Benjamin and 11-year-old Vivian. So what do you think? Is Tom Brady over her? Eric, do you know?
Well, I mean, Eric may or may not know, but apparently Tom posted like a sunset with some song after the, the news broke yesterday. Whether or not it was truly linked to it or everyone's trying to say it was, who knows? But the other thing, if you remember, what, like 2 weeks ago when they had the Victoria's Secret fashion show again, everyone's like, where was Gisele? Why wasn't she in it? Because it would have been quite the statement to walk down with a bit of a belly.
Oh, there you go. Next, more than 60% of Americans in a new poll say their mental health has either been slightly or moderately or significantly impacted by November's elections. 46% say they feel of anxiety. 37% say they're stressed. 31% experiencing fear when it comes to 2024. Specifically, Gen Z, 66%. Millennials, 64%. Gen X, 63%. I wonder who's bringing it all down. 56% of baby boomers. Although the survey found the top emotions surrounding the election are anxiety, stress, and fear. In fact, 27% of participants are feeling optimistic. 22% feel excitement. 16% are happy. 12% are actually feeling a sense of relief that it's finally here. Men more likely to express excitement than women at 19%. So 27-19. Even more men say they have a sense of optimism, 32% versus pessimism, 24%. I think we should toughen up as a country.
Well, that is true. And I mean, also, if just you turn on anything, it's just election 24/7. If you remember, there are other stories happening. The world is still turning.
Yes. Next, forget the middle seat or the spot next to the bathroom. A new survey finds the worst seat on a flight can be anywhere if the passenger next to you doesn't use headphones. The poll found that 83% of Americans believe wearing headphones in public is basic travel etiquette, with noise pollution and fellow passengers becoming such a significant issue that 58% say they've reached public crisis levels. So how bad is a noisy seatmate? The survey commissioned by JBL found it's bad enough that the travelers would accept almost any alternative when faced with the passenger playing audio without headphones. Guess what? On certain planes, they're allowing phone calls. You can get on the phone and FaceTime with people.
Where are they letting that?
Oh, yeah. They announced it last week. And it's a major airline. One or two major airlines is doing it.
That would
be a disaster. Although I don't know how you slow down technology, but I just think it would be a disaster.
Well, Tristan was just telling us how we can try to slow down technology. But no, I agree. Anyone who's FaceTiming even just off of a plane and doesn't have a headphone in, it's just rude.
But look, even if they do have a headset, you're going to hear their side. I don't want to hear them on a plane.
But how is that different if they're talking in a normal tone than if they were talking with their seatmate?
But not everybody's talking at once. Oh, yeah. You're saying that they sit there on a phone.
And they're not talking loudly. They're just talking like they would be talking to someone sitting next to them.
I just don't want it.
No, I don't disagree with you right there, too. But
just listen. Don't stop talking me out of it. Shocking numbers still don't have to wash. Still don't wash their hands after using the toilet. Australia did a study on this. Close to half of people admit, 42%, they don't always wash their hands before handling food.
Well, that's disturbing. My only question about this survey, though, is they say washing their hands, but there's so much hand sanitizer out there. Could they hopefully be using that instead? Maybe.
Okay, maybe.
We can hope.
Next, a baby born in the parking lot of his parents' favorite microbrewery in Michigan was named after the business, which in turn created a special brew to honor the newborn. Aaron and Kyle Baker were on their way to Vicksburg to the Bronson Methodist Hospital in Kalamazoo on the baby's due date when they realized they would not make it there. They called for an ambulance and pulled over at the parking lot at One Well Brewing, which happens to be their favorite microbrewery. And baby Forrest Wells Baker was born moments later. Forrest Wells Baker.
It's a very memorable name.
Forrest.
And they said he might get free beer for life once he turns 21.
Well, yes. Let's please wait. Thanks so much for listening. By the way, I'll see you February 15th in Jacksonville on History, Liberty, and Laughs. BrianKilmeade.com. I want to see you in person. Tickets are selling quick. It seems like a long way away. But why wait till the last minute to shop for Christmas? After all, Halloween's here. Brian Kilmeade's here.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.